In Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, a very special principle is revealed to God's people. In this verse, the Apostle Paul wrote, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose." That's an outstanding passage from an outstanding section of Scripture. You can't read Romans 8 verses 18 through the end of the chapter and be encouraged, and I'll pray for you. That's all I can say. That's one of the most inspiring and uplifting sections of Scripture in the entire Bible. This is just one of the great principles revealed. Well, we find that principle illustrated numerous times throughout the Bible, especially in the Old Testament. We find God working all things together for good on behalf of his people. Does that over and over again. That's one way that we know that that principle is dependable, because we see it illustrated so many times. We have seen how all things work together for good in the life of Esther, also in the lives of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But while God was working all things together for the good of these individuals, in turn, he was working all things together for the good of his people. Because Esther, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had a great influence upon God's people. Tonight, for a little while, we want to notice how the same principle is illustrated in the life of Daniel. Daniel's a great Old Testament character. He's normally referred to as a prophet, but he was a great statesman. He served under the Babylonian rule as well as the Persian rule. And for a Jewish man to reach a high position in both governments says something about him. Also says something about God and his providence. So for a little while, we want to concentrate on some matters that relate to Daniel. Let's briefly look at some background information given to us in the first five chapters of Daniel. We need to be reminded of these things so that we can appreciate how God was working in the life of Daniel in chapter 6. In chapter 1, we're introduced to Daniel. Let's look at the first seven verses. Daniel chapter 1, starting at verse 1. "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, of the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego." When the king of Babylon took control of Jerusalem, he gave the command for certain of the young Jewish men to be taken and to be trained in the customs and the language of the Babylonian people. They would go under a period of 3 years in training. At the end of that 3 years, they would be set before the king. Now, I've mentioned this before in our study last week. Nebuchadnezzar was a shrewd king. I believe he understood that the Jewish people would respond better if one of their own people was in control of them. The Jewish people did not like foreigners having control over them. They never did. There were many times when that happened, but they didn't like it. I believe Nebuchadnezzar was a shrewd king when he was selecting certain Jewish young men to actually serve as the rulers of the Jewish people. But before they would be appointed to those positions, they would be trained in the customs and the language of the people of Babylon. In the remaining part of chapter 1, we read about something that Daniel refused to do. He refused to defile himself by eating the food that the king provided, as well as drinking the wine that the king provided. Now, the man who was in charge of Daniel was very concerned that if he did not eat and drink the things that the king provided, he would lose weight, and the king would know that something was wrong. So Daniel reasoned with the man who was in charge of him. He said, "You give us pulse to eat and water to drink for a period of, I believe, 10 days and see how we look." At the end of that period, they actually looked better than the ones who were eating those things that were supplied by the king. So the man who was in charge of these young men allowed them to do what they wanted to do. You see, they stood up for what was right by refusing to do something that would defile them. God took care of them. There could have been a stiff penalty for refusing to take in those things provided by the king, but God took care of them. In chapter 2, Daniel was given an opportunity to not only interpret a dream that Nebuchadnezzar the king had, but he also revealed it. The king had a dream, and apparently the next day he forgot it. He knew he dreamed, but he couldn't remember what it was. So he called in all of his wise men and asked them to reveal the dream. Of course, they couldn't do that. And they even made the statement that no king has ever asked anyone to do that. They said, "Oh, you tell us the dream, we'll interpret it for you." The king said, "You reveal the dream to me, and I'll believe your interpretation." Well, they went back and forth several times, and finally the king became angry at all of his wise men and was going to punish them. Daniel learned about it, and he asked to be given an opportunity to appear before the king. Well, that was a great dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, and the interpretation is very important because it showed that God was going to cause four great world empires to rise and fall, and then God would establish his everlasting kingdom. That's a clear reference. As a matter of fact, if you go on through the rest of the book of Daniel, you will see that those empires are actually listed, except for the Roman Empire. You can read a description of the Roman Empire, but they're not called by name. The other kingdoms are actually called by name. Babylon was in control at that time. Remember, the dream was about a great image, and its body was divided into various sections composed of different materials. Those different sections of the image's body had to do with four great world empires that would rise and they would fall. Then there would be a great stone cut out from a mount without hands, and it would destroy that great image. Well, Daniel gave the interpretation, and he showed that in the days of those kings, that is the kings of the fourth great empire, God would set up his kingdom that would never be destroyed. That's in about verse 44 of chapter 2. Well, Daniel not only interpreted the king's dream, but he first revealed it. I think that really got the attention of King Nebuchadnezzar. Look at the last two verses of chapter 2, verses 48 and 49. And notice how Daniel was given a very high position in the Babylonian government. Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. Once again, you see God working all things together for the good of his people. By the way, that great prophecy that was involved in that dream gave the Jewish people something to look forward to for many, many years. In chapter 3 that we studied last week, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were cast into the burning fiery furnace, but they were delivered. Consequently, the king promoted them. Now remember, they were very good friends with Daniel. They were very close friends. In chapter 4, Daniel interpreted another dream for the king. Now this is different from the other dream. It showed what would actually happen to Nebuchadnezzar, that he would spend some time living out in the wilderness like an animal. Well, Daniel interpreted the dream for the king, but I believe about a year passed, and Nebuchadnezzar admired his great kingdom that he had set up with his hands. He was lifted up with pride. That was all part of the dream. Apparently the king forgot it. Anyway, he spent some time out in the wilderness living like an animal. And after a certain period of time, he finally lifted up his eyes on high, and he realized that God is in control. God returned his position to him and blessed him once again. Well, very interesting. Daniel interpreted that dream. That brings us to chapter 5. In chapter 5, there's a change of power. The Medes and the Persians conquered Babylon. Now that was all part of the dream that we've already talked about in chapter 2. Nebuchadnezzar's, I believe, grandson, actually, Belshazzar, I get Belshazzar and Belteshazzar confused. Belshazzar was the king. Belteshazzar was the other name given to Daniel. Belshazzar was king, and he had a big feast, and he called for all the vessels taken earlier from the temple of God in Jerusalem to be brought forth, and they drank wine in those vessels. It was then that the handwriting appeared on the wall. You've heard that expression for years. I doubt that very many people know that that expression actually comes from the Bible. But there was a man's hand putting the writing on the wall. Belshazzar saw it. The Bible says his knees smote together. Now that's a pretty good sign that someone is very nervous and upset. No one could read the writing. Daniel was brought in. He read it, and he gave the interpretation that the king's days were numbered. He was about to be defeated by the Medes and the Persians. Well, that's exactly what took place. But when this new government came into power, when the Medes and the Persians took control of Babylon, Daniel was once again highly promoted. Let's go down to the end of chapter 5 and start at verse 29. then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. And that's a very high position. And that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. A new government has come into power. The Babylonians have been defeated. The Medes and the Persians are now the great world empire. But Daniel was highly promoted. You can see God working all things together for the good of Daniel as well as for the Jewish people. Now that's background information that we need to keep in mind as we now look at chapter 6. This is where we want to spend most of our time this evening. We will see that Daniel was protected from the lions. No doubt you're very familiar with this story, but it thrills my soul every time I read it. I never get tired of reading this, and I was trying to remember the first time that I ever had any contact with the story of Daniel in the lion's den. And suffice it to say, I would have been a little boy in Sunday school. So that was a long time ago. But this is one of those great Bible stories that is mentioned even in the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, where the people of faith from the Old Testament are mentioned. And there's one verse that says, "Stop the mouths of lions." That's a clear reference to what happened on this occasion. Let's first look at verses 1, 2, and 3. We will see that the new king, Darius, promoted Daniel in this new government. "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. But this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm." It's clear that King Darius had great confidence in Daniel. He gave him a high position. There were others who were under his authority, and the king thought about placing him over the whole realm. That's quite an accomplishment for a Jewish man taken into captivity. Daniel was a great man. The Bible says there was an excellent spirit in him. He had outstanding character, but he allowed himself to be used by God in a very special way. But Daniel is highly promoted in this new government. Now, a number of rulers are mentioned here. 120 princes. When you have that many politicians, what's eventually going to happen? There's going to be some jealousy. There will be some attempt for someone to try to rise to power over the others. And we've seen some of the dirty dealings in politics. This is nothing new. Been around for a long, long time. There was a conspiracy that developed to get rid of Daniel. Now, we've already mentioned the fact that he had an excellent spirit in him. He had been faithful to the king of Babylon. He was now faithful to the king of Persia. He had no jealousy in his mind, and he got along with people. He was a great ruler. But there were some who were jealous of him, and they wanted to get rid of him. Verse 4, "Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find none occasion nor fault. For as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Now I believe that verse sums up Daniel's character. Here we have a bunch of politicians looking for some dirt they could find on him. They couldn't find any. I believe if there was some dirt to be found, they would have found it. They could find no accusation to bring against him. I think I've mentioned this before, but a number of years ago, one of my cousins was asked to serve as clerk of the court in Suwanee County. And some of the men who came and talked to him, he's the son of a farmer, you know, he wasn't trained in politics. It's my understanding that some of the men who came and talked to him about running for that position said, we can't do it because we all have things in our past that will be brought against us. They said, you don't. He let them talk him into running. He ran and he won. Well, I was glad to know that there was someone in my family that could run for office and no dirt could be found on him. Well, they could find nothing of a negative form against Daniel. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. They reasoned and thought the only way they could find something to use against him would somehow involve the law of God. So they came up with this plan. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors, and the princes, the counselors, and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. In our study of Esther, we pointed out how a king, Ahasuerus, went along with a foolish law that came from Haman to destroy all of the Jewish people. He didn't check it out ahead of time. He just went along with it. And the Jews were in danger of losing their lives. Well, here, these other politicians came up with the idea that if anybody made a petition of any god or man except for the king, for a period of 30 days, the penalty would be being thrown into the den of lions. Now, what's a petition that we make of God? It's called prayer, isn't it? Prayer is a petition to God. Daniel was a praying man. And these people knew it. And if they could catch Daniel making a petition to God in that 30-day period, then perhaps they would be able to eliminate him. The penalty would be being thrown into the den of lions. And when the king of Persia made a law and it was official, what do we know about it? It could not be changed in any way. Well, we've already talked about that in our study of Esther. So there are some other rulers in the kingdom who developed this conspiracy to get rid of Daniel. How did Daniel react? Let's look at verses 10 and 11. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he knew what was going on. He knew the law. He went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Remember what the law said? If anyone makes a petition of any god or man except for the king for a period of 30 days, well, he'd be cast into the den of lions. Daniel knew about that law, and just as he had always done, he prayed. I've always thought it was interesting that he opened his windows toward the direction of Jerusalem. I don't believe for one moment that Daniel was praying to be seen of men. This was his custom to pray three times a day. As he did, he got down on his knees, but he opened his windows toward Jerusalem. Later on, you will find in this book that Daniel was doing some Bible study. Apparently, he was studying from the book of Jeremiah. And Jeremiah said that that period of captivity would last for 70 years. I believe Daniel did some adding in his mind, and he knew the time was near for God to deliver his people. Therefore, he began to get them ready. He knew the time was right. I believe Daniel was looking forward to the day when his people would go back to Jerusalem, their homeland. I believe that's one reason why he opened his windows toward Jerusalem and prayed three times a day. Daniel's to be commended, isn't he? He knew about that law, but he prayed anyway. What was the penalty? Well, the penalty for doing that was being cast into the den of lions. Now, that's what happened to Daniel. Let's continue at verse 12. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, The thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Then answered they and said before the king, That Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition three times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men assembled unto the king, and said unto the king, Know, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king establisheth may be changed. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet, and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. You know, prayer being made illegal has been around for a long time, hasn't it? But regardless of what politicians do, regardless of what laws are passed, God's faithful people will continue praying. I had a teacher one time who said, as long as there are examinations in school, there will be prayer in school. Well, I think about that every once in a while. These men came up with a law which said that prayer would be illegal. That is, making a petition of God. Daniel prayed anyway. Now, there was a very stiff penalty for that. But Daniel knew something that the apostles would state many years later. we ought to obey God rather than men. Well, you know the story. The lions did not harm Daniel. You know, I don't know how many lions were in this den. I've never actually seen a lion out in the wild. Don't really care to. But I have seen on film of what one lion can do. And suffice it to say, I don't want to tangle with one. And I especially wouldn't want to tangle with the whole den of them. Verse 18. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. The king had a rough night, didn't he? He knew that he was to blame for this, that he went along with that foolish law, but once it was signed, it could not be changed. I suspect he was very unhappy with himself. Verse 19, then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God hath sent his angel and hath shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me, forasmuch as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. Then was the king exceedingly glad for him, and commanded that they should take up Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God. Do you remember how Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were completely delivered from the furnace? Not even one hair was singed. Even the smell of the smoke did not get on their clothes. Daniel was completely delivered. Not one lion tried to hurt him. Well, it seems that the king was happy the next day when he saw that Daniel was alive. And did you notice that the king gave God credit for this? By serving God faithfully as he had, Daniel already made quite an impression upon others. Well, those who were responsible for this conspiracy were all cast into the den of lions. Verse 24 says, and the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions had the mastery of them, and brake all their bones in pieces, or wherever they came at the bottom of the den. Well, these men were responsible for getting Daniel cast into the den of lions. He was spared, and they were killed by the lions. Now, what took place made quite an impression on the king. Let's continue at verse 25. Then King Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree. Now, what do we know about the decrees of the Medes and the Persians? They could not be altered. He said, I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Does God work all things together for the good of his people? Yes, This is just one example. Daniel was faithful, and God used him to be a blessing to his people. Remember, the tribe of Judah was the group of Israelites in captivity. God was preserving them because one day Jesus would come from the tribe of Judah. So think about these great Bible characters, not only for the faith that they showed through what they did, but how their faith had a tremendous influence upon many people who would live after them, including us today.